to another episode of What Else You Got with Mitch and Marco. Hey, Mitchell, what you got today?
Well, so, you know the words pickpocket, cutthroat, and I lost my list because I forgot to write down my list. But words of those flavors where you put the verb first and then the noun? Are you familiar with what those are called?
Well, I'm very familiar with compound words because I love words, but I don't know that I've ever pondered the concept of putting a verb before a noun unless I'm having a conversation with Yoda. Is that what you're talking about? Yoda speak?
Nope, not Yoda speak. Like copycat, pickpocket, cutthroat, tattletale, and all these other words that fit that dynamic, which they're generally negative connotations used as insults.
I don't think I've ever thought this through before. So what I hear you saying is that if you've got a compound word that has a verb before a noun, it's an insult?
Generally. And I'm pretty sure I'll come up with more words because I'm trying to think of them, but they're known as cutthroat compounds. They stem from French.
I'm racking my brain trying to think of a verb-noun combo that is not an insult. But you're right. If you think of cutthroat, that's somebody who just really cuts right to it, right? And tattletale is somebody who's telling business that is not their own or, you know, tattling on somebody else. I just asked Google, because, you know, Google's my favorite source, right? How is scarecrow an insult?
Well, there's a couple different ways. Granted, I don't have the definition or the etymology, I think that's the right word, the history of words or the parts of it. But it's one of those that scarecrow, it scares, and it's a crow. But if you apply it to a person, it's usually someone who just stands out in a field that no one really wants to be around.
Okay. I'm asking Google here. It's like our third person in our podcast here. Ooh, killjoy. Yeah, that's not a nice one. Rot gut. Oh, here's one. Breakfast. Not necessarily an insult, but the original meaning was a meal that breaks a fast because you're thinking of your overnight fasting. So that's not necessarily an insult.
Which that's probably more outside of the cutthroat compound category of words. But yeah. since you have our third person, what does Google say a cutthroat compound is?
It says cutthroat compounds are a rare type of English compound word formed by a verb followed by its noun object. This word formation pattern is unusual in English, as words are more commonly formed in the reverse order with noun verbs, such as book lover or firefighter. And so book lover is not an insult. Firefighter is not an insult. I'm going to ask Google a follow-up question. Are cutthroat compounds insults? Insults. Oh, it says yes. It says yes. Cutthroat compounds can function as insults because they often describe unlikable or contemptible people by placing the verb before its noun, reversing the typical pattern. So killjoy instead of joy killer. I don't know. I don't like joy killers. I'm just saying I like the way it sounds. Mm-hmm. Joy killer is pretty descriptive. Well, now I want to look at the... Go ahead. Cutthroat, instead of saying cutthroat, you could say throat cutter. It sounds more like a horror movie if you put it noun verb.
Yeah, because at least the little bit that I saw related to this topic, it was a linguist who was talking about cutthroat compounds and how they stem from French. And one of the things that you and I were briefly talking about before we started recording was why is it offensive if it stems from French? And if you go back way into the medieval era of how the English and French just did not get along, they kept fighting constantly, and so it was a insult to call someone of your language the other language. And so it's one of those that if you want to mock someone for having the attributes of the other opposing party, you would mimic their language structure, and that's how you would get these word structures that in other languages make complete sense, but when they translate to English, they come across as brutal and cutthroat and very strong, is because it's a word that has been characterized as an insult towards the opposing party.
Google also says the reverse structure can be seen as a way to mock or express strong disapproval, especially since the more common and standard structure for similar words is the other way. So I think that's what you just said. But then also it says the
And I was not looking at
construction,
Google either.
yeah, because you're smarter than me. It also says Google, not it, call Google by its name. Google also says using this construction can treat the subject with contempt, depersonalizing them by framing them through their negative actions. So an insult comes from the depersonalization. So instead of saying, Margot cuts throats, I don't actually, by saying Margot is cutthroat. It's depersonalizing. Does that make sense?
Makes sense. Yeah, because I think of quite a few of the slurs that I can think of that I'm not going to repeat. And quite a few of them very much are the depersonalization of someone. And that's really where you start getting these
Yes.
slurs, is a good way to put it. And so these cutthroat compounds are shorthand for slur, basically.
Yes. Oh, and Google also heard what you said about the historical context with French. It says the pattern is similar to French grammar and was reportedly used to describe despicable agents and was considered extra insulting in the past. Wow, you and Google are pretty smart.
Yeah, I guess in modern terms, I guess one way to put it would be you're a Russian sympathizer, or you're a Chinese sympathizer, or a North Korean sympathizer, which, just based off your facial expressions, is one of those that you're going, I don't want that brought up around here. It's one of those that you start mimicking these type of things, because if you think of all these memes that are of these countries' leaders. They are, and then you apply it to some people because some people are the epitome of it. That's one of the things. And actually, as I was thinking about it, Karens, which that's a plural, not a name, and which then makes it a cutthroat descriptor adjective, where it's the dehumanizing, whatever the word we were using was.
Depersonalization.
Yeah,
Depersonalization.
depersonalization, and it's became a title instead of a name, and because it's now a title, it is a slur towards a person.
Okay, so one website says that there are only 30 cutthroat compounds. I want to take that as a personal challenge. I want to come up with a list of my own, because I'm sure there's got to be more than 30. And then another one says that these are vulgar.
So, slur category.
It says they are clumps of insults for the dregs of society. That sounds insulting right there, doesn't it? Kind of said to me that if you use cutthroat compounds, you're a vulgar dreg of society.
Yeah, sounds like sarcasm.
Oh, it says, oh, this is interesting. I'm on, it pulled up a PDF, HughesIgniteFinal.pdf. It says, cutthroat backstabbers, the vulgar world of verb noun compounds. This sounds a little racy. We should keep reading. It says, language is a tool. don't be a tool about language. Are we being tools? And then it defines what a compound is. We already know what a compound word is. It's two words put together to describe one idea. We already know that. Who's being a tool? Maybe this guy's being a tool. Fire truck, strong man, hovercraft. Okay, we already know those. A compound. Now he's putting in cartoons. Oh, it's kind of funny though. Maybe Mitch, maybe you can put this up on the podcast for everybody to see, because there's a picture of a fire truck, a man in his, I suppose, pajamas or underwear. And the man says to the fireman, he says, "Oh, well, you should have called it a water truck, not a fire truck." Kind of funny.
That is a good
get
one.
It? You get it without seeing the picture?
Yep. Yep. Because
oh, okay.
That reminds me of just some things that they were named one thing, but the epitome of what they were stuck more than what it was intended for. Which one of the things that I can think of offhand is like Kleenex. Kleenex has problems selling anything that's not a tissue.
Right, and Xerox.
Because
are Xerox machines still around? Yeah. Xerox is a brand. Kleenex is a brand. But they've come
Band-Aid's
to
a brand.
Represent. What?
And Band-Aid.
Yes, they've come to represent the product rather than the brand. Here's a, I already forgot, a verb noun compound that is not an insult. A rowboat.
Yeah, I was thinking a rum runner.
Rum runner. Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those I'm going, actually, I guess that doesn't fit our compound or cutthroat compound structure, but yeah.
Well, here's some that are not insults. Breakneck, that's not an insult. Like, you move at a breakneck speed.
Mm-hmm.
Ceasefire is not
that's
an
almost
insult.
A compliment.
What?
Yeah. Well, so breakneck is almost a compliment. Ceasefire is technically it's two verbs.
Well, but also I think, no, not, whoops, not two verbs, but I think the author of this paper is confusing the verb noun compound with standard words, because would you consider ceasefire to be a compound? I don't.
No,
I consider ceasefire to be one word.
And the funny thing, as you bring that up, the influencer that I originally saw the cutthroat from, they also brought up another set of words that it's more of how things evolved, where if you go off of the pure original words and follow how their past tense would change how it's spelled, but we've shifted to it, like one shot is a term used in video games where you get to just take a single shot and you get to shoot one thing. But if you use it a certain way, I one-shotted, and that's the past tense of the action, but it's not I one-shoot it.
Well, and yeah. Shot is an interesting choice for that example, but I understand what you're saying. And to your point, the word ceasefire, yes, it originally started as two words, not a compound, but two words, military saying hold the firing, right? Cease fire, stop fighting. So it was two words, and then over time it evolved into a compound word with a hyphen. But now it is not a compound word. It is one word that could mean either a verb or a noun. We all agreed to a ceasefire. Noun, or they all...
Ceasefire.
Let's
ceasefire is the verb.
Yeah,
we agreed to a ceasefire as a noun.
Yeah. So now it is one word. So I don't know what year this fellow wrote his paper. I don't know if it says in here, but So I disagree with some of his words about, I don't see a date on this paper that he worked so hard on.
And it kind of just illustrates that with time, words drift, and as words drift, their meanings and application change. Because it goes back to, I know we had a Gen Z spot a while ago, but like chat is the audience, which it's not what you and I are used to for chat. Chat is the conversation between a group of people, not a recipient that in theory responds back. Or I just lost another example, but apparently one of the other things that has come up recently is how punctuation is used.
Are we
Because
going to talk about
apparently, if you add,
punctuation?
this is the way I'm drifting, but it's because apparently, if you end a text message with a period, it's abrupt. If you end a text message without a period, it's a text message. If you add an exclamation point, it's really abrupt. If you add a space before an exclamation point, so you have the word space exclamation point, it's a softer punctuation point. So, Miss Editor Margot, what are your thoughts on punctuation?
There are specific rules for punctuation.
You want to get into Oxford commas?
Do I want to what? What did you
Oxford
say?
comma?
Oxford comma.
Oxford comma?
Everybody should use an Oxford comma. Period.
Yep, eat, shoots, and leaves. One of the best examples.
Yes,
You want to
everybody
elaborate
should.
on that one?
No, I'm not sure we can discuss punctuation without visuals. I feel like
I can put all the
punctuation,
visuals right here. Look at all these punctuation marks.
I think we need visuals for punctuation because there are certain rules. And when you were in school, did you ever have to learn how to diagram sentences?
Yeah, when I was a wee tight.
When you were a wee tot.
Hot, tight, whatever.
Just like
It goes to
punctuation,
enunciation and accents.
enunciation. Okay. I find sentence diagramming to be fascinating. When I was in school as a kid, I couldn't comprehend it and it made my brain hurt. But then as I became more involved in writing and editing, I find sentence diagramming to be quite fascinating because it helps you understand language better. And
And funny you say that.
punctuation
So
matters. What?
funny you say that. So for someone who does not dabble in English as much as I don't dabble in English as much as you do. I dabble in English more than I wish I did, because I joined IT to avoid English, but I spend most of my days writing English. I
That's
don't know
what
how
I
that
think is
happens.
really funny about a lot of IT people. I've heard that from multiple people that they went into the IT field because they didn't care for writing, and then they end up spending a good chunk of their work day writing there it's a
And
term,
reading.
documenting.
Yep, technical writing.
Yeah. So I've heard that from
But
multiple IT people. That's pretty funny.
what I was
Cutthroat.
going to say is, actually, I was going sentence structures, but it was one of those, and yes, it is cutthroat for what we have
Ah,
here.
see what I did there?
But it's one of those that sometimes when I'm reading books, web articles, and whatnot, sometimes there's just a sentence I'm going, what the crap did they just say? Because it's just one of those that's all over the place. And so I actually have to sit down and I structure the sentence and I diagram it in my head. I don't write it in the book, but it's one of those I'm looking at going, all right, so this part up until the comma, I'm looking at it going, the red fox runs. Okay. Comma, around the box, comma, to get home. And you're going, oh, okay, they ran home, because you can just take out that center section, because and between two commas, you can basically omit it. But then the fun part is when they start adding comma after comma after comma, because they keep switching in and out of the core sentence and back out to subtext. And it's just one of those that sometimes they just write really weird and you look at it and go, what are they saying? And then you start taking out chunks of the sentence. And next thing you know, you go, the fox ran home.
But that's it. One of the things I tell people all the time is, do you need that many words to get to the point? Because, and I even use this in my current work job, let's be concise, let's be precise. If the receiver of the information doesn't need to know that the fox ran around the box, then just write the fox ran home. Why are you including extra information if it's not necessary? Because as a writer, my goal was always to leave out the words people skip over. So if people are skipping over certain words, trying to figure out what your point is, then you're writing too many words. Lead with your point. What is the point?
That sounds like a lot of the documents I read, because I suffer from a condition where I don't read all the words, which is really annoying. And so I am keyword searching. So I'm skimming really, really quick. I don't know how many words per minute I skim, but I skim. I'm looking for very specific keywords or very specific word patterns. So I'm not even reading the sentence, but I'm going, if these words fall in this certain area, I need to read that sentence. And so I skim really quickly. And more often than not, I miss details because it was lost in a sea of useless words. And that's usually what bites me. But it's one of those that my protest against English classes is, why do I need to write a 5,000 word paper on something that I can say in 5 words? Which on one hand, I'm going, it's useless to teach people to add in all the fluff. Because I had one English teacher that said, I made a beautiful hamburger with the bun, the lettuce, the tomato, the onion, the cheese, the lettuce, the pickles, the condiments and all that. But I had no meat to my sandwich because I just had fluff, because that's right. What, to get your 5,000 right. words, that's what you end up with.
But even to your point of a hamburger, if your target audience all knows what a basic hamburger is, you don't even need to describe all the details unless there's a purpose to it. There, so like in the art of creative fiction writing, every word, every sentence, every paragraph either needs to advance the plot or develop a character. And if it's not achieving one of those goals, then why are those words even on the page? But even if we're not talking about writing fiction or writing a book of nonfiction, even if we're just talking about daily word structure, I still, in my current job, one of my things I enjoy doing is I will use the function in whatever program to count how many words are in a paragraph. Say the paragraph, or even the sentence, say the sentence has 40 words in it. And then I show the person how we can actually reduce that and make it more concise and reduce it down to 15 words. It's something I enjoy doing, cutting out that fluff, because we're all busy. You're busy, I'm busy, everybody's busy. Unless it advances our purpose, plot, or character development, cut out all those extra words and get to the point.
And one of the really interesting things, so going back to the English example, one reason why it's good to write the 5,000 words, even though you can say it in five, is it teaches you how to structure the fluff to be useful fluff versus just empty air. Because more often than not, as I'm writing all my technical documentation, is what I assume someone knows, someone does not know. Therefore, I need to figure out how to include it without being overly verbose. And it really comes down to know your audience, because as you're able to build out these documents, if you say, go to this screen, well, their first question is, which screen, which tool, and how do I get there? And so then you have to write out 4 other paragraphs. And it really comes down to, if you need to know what level of competency someone is, and you need to work through it. Because I recently did a job, actually not recently, a couple years ago.
Can I interrupt there? Can I interrupt yeah. there? So, yes, so that's one of the main differences between creative fiction writing and technical report writing, because if you're writing a policy or procedure, that's where bullet points and subheadings really play a key part, because for, like you mentioned, you're a skimmer. Well, if the technical report writer is using subheadings and bullet points, then the skimmer can just quickly find the information that's applicable to them. And if the reader already knows steps 1 through 4, then the reader can just skip down to step 5 because they already know where that screen is that you're talking about. So that's one of the major differences between technical report writing and creative fiction.
Yeah. And just as you said, structure really does tell quite a few things, because as I was saying a couple years ago, I was asked to provide documentation on a project I did, and I provided the first draft and they go, but I feel like it's missing stuff that I don't know. And I go, all right, fine. I'll spell it out verbosely. And if I handed it to a technical person, it would have been 3 paragraphs, but to a non-technical person, I had to spell out absolutely everything. Section headers saying, this is to get to this section, this is for this topic, this is for that, and break it down. And I did lots of number lists going, if you can't go 1 to 5, because 3 and 4 are needed, unless they're clearly marked optional, suggested, advised, which at those points you can start jumping around, but it really comes down to include the correct stuff for the correct thing. Because as you're saying, for a fictional, if you're describing a juicy hamburger that has nothing to do except you're just trying to fill word count, that's great. Doesn't do anything. But if the juicy hamburger happens to describe that there's a lump of poison pill somewhere mixed in, that it tastes very subtle, and you just describe how the character barely can detect this hint of muskiness in their burger that shouldn't be there, and then the muskiness then jumps over and goes, oh yeah, back on page 32, the character was trained to detect this musky poison and avoid it. At that point, the burger then becomes applicable.
Right, because the burger you're describing advances the plot. The other angle would be if something about the enjoyment of that burger develops the character within the story. So there are big differences between technical report writing, creative fiction writing, and even nonfiction writing. I used to review a lot of books, and one of my review points on any nonfiction book was the way it was structured. Because with a nonfiction book, I would always skim the table of contents first. This is before I'd even buy a book. If I'm buying a book, I have different rules than if I'm reviewing a book that was given to me, but for review purposes. But I will always, with a nonfiction book, skim the table of contents, and then I'll flip through the pages, just kind of fan through them to look to see, are there subheadings? Are there quote boxes? Because a nonfiction book should be structured quite differently from a work of fiction that is just paragraphs and sentences. But every type of writing serves a different purpose.
So what you're saying is this weird thing about these document formats, and I don't even remember all the formats. I want to say PLA is one of them, or ABA, or I think those are actually filaments, not
I have no idea what those acronyms are for.
But I know that there's a million different ways to write English papers, and those who have to write English papers know all the different formats, which I don't remember. But
you mean so style? Are you talking about like style guides? Like the Chicago Manual, what is that called? The Chicago Manual.
So, not quite style guide, but I just know English papers and basically scientific papers, they all have these different formats that they're supposed to follow. Like for English classes,
so you're talking about
class.
Like APA.
APA.
It is a style guide. So like Chicago Manual of Style, and then there's the APA. They're style guides.
Yeah, I knew it sounded like filaments. Or 3D printing. But yeah, it's one of those that it's so the reader doesn't have to jump through all of the, all right, is this a technical paper? Is this kind of paper? It's very much, everyone looks the same, so you can quickly tell if someone's doing something different, weird, or wrong.
any writer, whether you're writing technical reports, policies and procedures, nonfiction or fiction, anybody who writes on a regular basis should read The Elements of Style by Strunk and White. Ever heard of that? It's a very small book. I could look up how many pages. It's a very small book, but to its point, it leaves out the unnecessary words. So it's a book I highly recommend. It's called The Elements of Style by Strunk and White. It is very essential. One of the examples in there talks about how we ought not to speak or write in negatives. So instead of saying, oh my gosh, I'm not even going to be able to think of an example off the top of my head. If I was in my previous residence, I had it right behind me. And so if I was there, I could grab it right off my shelf, but I haven't unpacked all my books yet. For example, what did you say?
The knot tie.
Nope.
That's a tie, but it's not a tie.
You're trying to be funny.
So yeah. So you're saying don't be avoidant, just say it straight up.
So instead of saying something like, Mitch does not tell the truth. Instead of saying it in the negative, you would say Mitch is a liar. So let's see. Mitch does not tell the truth. That's 6 words. Or Mitch is a liar. 4 words. So stating something in the positive rather than the negative, which both versions are pretty negative of you if you are a liar. But it makes it more concise and precise because you're saying exactly what you mean. You're not saying the opposite of what you mean. Wait, that didn't come out right. So instead of saying Mitch is not a liar, wait, I still said that wrong, didn't I? Mitchell does not tell the truth. I said that totally backwards, didn't I? Mitch does not tell the truth. 6 words, Mitch is a liar. I said it totally backwards
the first time. The funny thing is that there's actually a very similar programming concept that you're not supposed to do negative comparisons. So if something that evaluates to true, and so the way you're supposed to do it is, what you're not supposed to do is Mitch is not Margot, which you're going, well, yeah, that's kind of obvious. But what you could do is, I saw a perfect example the other day that flips it. But basically, you want to remove the not part, and you want to say, Mitch is green. And if that's the case, you move on. If it's not, you go to the next statement. And it's just one of those that yes. You want to avoid the not statements.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm... Yes. Isn't that interesting how English and IT have...
Yes. It's the same basic logical principles. It's just applied differently.
Yes. So there is great value in being concise and precise. Say what you mean, not adding extra words. I think people will appreciate you more when you don't waste their time, when you are concise and precise. Ooh, that kind of circles us back then to where we started. Isn't that interesting? Being concise and precise with our cutthroat compounds.
You're rhyming with the timing.
You betcha.
But yeah, so it's definitely one of those that those very cutthroat compounds that are very cutthroat, precise, abrupt. Abrupt's a good word. The shock of shortness sometimes is the better point of the long-winded. I can't think of the political speech that just keeps going forever.
Filibustering, instead of having a long-winded filibustering, verbose, like you mentioned, the 5,000 word description of your insult where your enemy has fallen asleep or grown old and died or walked away because you just won't stop talking. Be concise and precise. You're a killjoy.
Yep. And as you say that, you think of a couple kids throwing shade at each other, I guess is the best way to put it. And all of a sudden you just have that one word that just Ooh, burn. Yeah. Because it's just right there. Just nailed it. And there's just no arguing. Versus the... Yeah, the zinger's a good one. Versus the long-winded... I have to build up to the joke because I have to explain the joke before I tell you the joke.
Yes.
The single word zingers are really it.
Look at us circling back. We are amazing.
Cool. Well, Margo, I think that's a pretty good discussion. What else you got?
I think that's it for today, except for the fact that I would be thrilled if people would share their favorite cutthroat compounds in the comments, share what ones you know, and if you have
the best zinger, one line zinger.
Yes, give us a zinger. Be concise and precise. Tell us what types of things you like to write about. Share with us. And then click the like button and share the podcast.
All the other magical buttons.
Yeah, do it all. Yeah. And then make sure you come back next time for another episode of What Else You Got with Mitch and Margot.